This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's John Doe Banks Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see johncast.net.
The night sky for October 2013. Before I start, just a little bit about the atmosphere through which we have to observe. There are two parameters that we sort of note. One is called the seeing, and it specifies how turbulent the atmosphere is. And that's important if you're actually looking, say, at high magnification at the planets. It's not so important when you're looking at distant galaxies and things like that. The other is the transparency of the atmosphere. It's basically a function of how much dust and aerosols and other little bits of things are in the atmosphere. They have two effects. One, of course, is they reduce the brightness of what you're looking at, but equally badly, they reflect more of the light from the ground, the light pollution. So it's sort of a double whammy. We have had some nights recently when the atmosphere has been very transparent. And the thing that I noticed, observing from about a mile from a town centre of about 25,000 inhabitants, was that, in fact, using a rather special meter, the limiting visual magnitude above me was 5.3. And that's actually pretty good. And I don't think I've ever had anything like that from the centre of a town before. And I suspect that one effect of the sort of downturn we've had in the last few years is that there are actually far fewer lights. I'm told, for example, about half the street lights are no longer operational. So that's really having an effect. So on occasions, it's surprising what you can see, even from an urban situation. Well, what about the sky? Well, of course, we've got a longer time to observe it now. After dark, moving towards the west, there's a very nice region of sky. In fact, high overhead initially is Cygnus the Swan with its bright star Deneb, and then Lyra, the Lyre, with Vega, its very bright star, and below them, Altair in Aquila, the Eagle, making up the summer triangle, which in fact you can keep seeing for quite a bit of the autumn, actually. Down towards the horizon from Vega is that rather nice constellation of Hercules, the four brightest stars making up what's called the Keystone. Two-thirds of the way up from the right-hand side of the Keystone is a rather nice globular cluster called M13. These have about a million stars in them, and they date really from the formation of our galaxy. Looking a bit further south and around towards the east, we have the great square of Pegasus. How many stars one can see with one's unaided eye within the square is quite a good test of the transparency. 5 isn't too bad, 7 to 9 is a lot better. Round from the upper left-hand star of the square, called Alpheratz, is the constellation of Andromeda. And there, of course, we have that lovely galaxy, M31, the Andromeda galaxy. And the way to find it's quite easy. You start from Alpheratz, you go one star to the left, fairly bright star, curve a bit round to the right, go to the next star, then go sharp right, 90 degrees, go to one star, and the same distance again, and you should see a little fuzzy glow. Certainly with binoculars, if you know where to look, and it's really transparent with your unaided eye as well. So there's quite a nice bit to see in the sky. Running down from Deneb towards the northeast is the plain of the Milky Way. In fact, I could actually make out a little bit of the Milky Way in the constellation of Cygnus the other night from my urban location. We have that rather nice open W, Cassiopeia. Below that is Perseus. And between the two, there's a lovely object or pair of objects called the double cluster. To the eye, they look like a little fuzzy blob, perhaps, if it's very clear and transparent. Binoculars will show them, and a telescope makes them look absolutely beautiful. So quite a lot to see in the sky in the evening. And of course, if you're happy to wait until after midnight or so, then Taurus will be rising. And the first thing that one sees, actually, is that rather beautiful open cluster called the Pleiades cluster. But more of that next month. Well, what about the planets? Well, really, actually, it's the morning that's the best time to observe the planets. Jupiter's very well placed in the pre-dawn sky. And also, I suppose, possibly towards the end of this month, we might have a chance to observe Comet Icen. Well, Jupiter rises at about midnight BST at the beginning of October, and about 2 hours earlier by the end. At the start of what they call astronomical twilight, it'll be about 40 degrees above the horizon in the southeast, shining at magnitude minus 2.2 with a disk 38 arc seconds across. So if you do get up early, just before dawn, you have a good chance to see it. It's lying in the constellation of Gemini, which is really right at the top of the ecliptic, which means it'll be highest in the sky, and that's really very good. On October the 12th, Jupiter's 90 degrees to the right of the Sun. And that's actually a time when it's very good to look for what are called eclipses and shadow transits of the four Galilean moons. By the end of October, Jupiter will be high in the southern sky before dawn, and with a magnitude of minus 2.4, its diameter will have increased to about 41 arc seconds. So, good chance of picking out the great red spot in the south equatorial belt. And nicely now, both equatorial belts are showing well. Mars is also in the morning sky. It lies in Leo, rising some 4 to 5 hours before the Sun this month, and shining at magnitude plus 1.6, so it's not that bright yet. Easily visible in binoculars in the pre-dawn sky, but obviously don't use them once the Sun has risen. Its magnitude stays pretty well constant this month at plus 1.6. The angular size increases a little bit from 4.4 to 4.9 arc seconds. Now that's interesting, because once it's about 5 arc seconds, you can begin to see some features on the surface, such as the polar caps and Syrtis Major. So we could say, by the end of this month, Mars has really started its current apparition. It lies very close to Regulus, Alpha Leonis, on the morning of the 12th, and its pink-red colour should make a very nice colour contrast with the blue-white of Regulus, which is a little brighter at magnitude 1.4. It's also very close to Comet Ison from October the 16th to the 19th, and that's something I'll come back to a little bit later. Well, what about the evening planets? Well, Saturn, lying in Libra, may just be visible low above the horizon for the first couple of weeks, lying well to the right of Venus, over, of course, in the west. And you may well need binoculars to pick it out in the twilight sky. It will have a magnitude of plus 0.7 and an angular size of 15.5 arc seconds. The rings have opened up quite nicely. You can actually see the northern hemisphere, while much of the southern hemisphere is actually hidden by the rings. We're not going to see it very well through a telescope as it's at low elevation, but I guess you might just pick out Saturn's largest moon, Titan. Saturn's now lying in the more southerly part of the ecliptic, so its elevation is not getting that high, and this will in fact get worse over quite a number of years to come. Well, we might just be able to spot Mercury. This is a might, actually. It's twice as bright as Saturn, but it's below it, and the net result is it'll be very hard to pick out in the glare of the Sun. So I'm not convinced that it's worth having a look for it, but on the 7th of October, it'll be 5 degrees below Saturn, and above Saturn, in fact, there'll be a slender crescent moon, so perhaps it's worth a try, but I promise you it won't be easy. Well, Venus can be seen above the horizon in the west after sunset, with its brightness increasing from minus 4.2 to minus 4.5 magnitude, so that's pretty bright. It's moving very quickly across the heavens. It starts the month in Libra, passes through Scorpius above Antares, and then Ophiuchus before reaching Sagittarius on November the 1st, when it's at its furthest angular separation from the Sun. The disk is getting larger, 18 to 25 arc seconds in the month, but at the same time, the percentage illuminated decreases from 73 to 50%, and that's why there's an interesting fact about Venus. The brightness stays pretty much constant over quite a long time, because when it's further away from the Earth, more of its smaller disk is illuminated by the Sun. So we have 50% of a 25 arc second disk, and that's pretty much equivalent in reflecting area to 73% of an 18 arc second disk. Well, finally, what about some highlights? Well, October the 8th, after sunset, theoretically one could see Venus, Saturn and Mercury along with a thin crescent moon. So about 45 minutes after sunset. You need a very low horizon in the west-southwest. I think you should easily see Venus lying below the moon and Saturn over to its right. That'll be above Mercury, but I'm not convinced you'll pick out Mercury. Maybe with binoculars you might well have a chance. I've mentioned Mars, and on October the 14th, I think as I said, it'll be very close to Regulus and Leo, making a very nice colour contrast. It's still actually quite a good month to observe Neptune with a small telescope, and on the night sky page, there's a chart showing you where to look. It was nearest the Earth on the 27th of August, so actually you see it quite well in the evening this month. Its magnitude is +7.9, so it's quite easily visible in binoculars if you know where to look, and that's in the constellation of Aquarius, as shown on the chart. It reaches an elevation of about 27 degrees when due south. If it's a good transparent night, as we had some recently, and given a telescope of 8 or more inches in diameter, you might well be able to spot its moon, Triton. Well, finally, you've all heard about Comet Ison, I suspect. It should become visible in a medium-sized telescope this month and will lie just above Regulus in Leo on the 16th and very close to Mars between the 16th and the 19th. The brightness was predicted to increase from magnitude 10 to magnitude 7 during October, and with magnitude 7, binoculars should pick it up quite easily. However, it doesn't seem to be brightening as much as predicted, and when observed on August the 12th, had a magnitude of 14.3 rather than the predicted magnitude between 12.3 and 13.5. So sadly, this might mean that Ison will not be the spectacular comet that many had hoped for. On the 16th, it'll be very close to Mars and Regulus in Leo, and it stays within 1 degree of Mars from the 16th to the 19th. We'll try and keep you updated as we learn more. There's a very nice app for iPad and Android devices called Sky Safari Plus, and that allows you to download the orbital elements of the comet, and it will then plot its position on the sky. And that's in fact how I have found the positions to plot on the chart to show you where Comet Ison will be found this month. There's an excellent website relating to the comet with lots of nice charts through the month, and you can find that by searching for Waiting for Ison. All small letters actually, Waiting for Ison. Those three words should find you the website, and I think it's well worth a look at. So let's hope you have some nice observing and you get some of these rather lovely transparent skies so you see the sky more clearly than sometimes.
Thanks for that, Ian. And for our Antipodean listeners, here's John Field with the Southern Night Sky.
Kia ora, and welcome to the October Jobcast coming to you from Carter Observatory, Wellington, New Zealand. October sees Scorpius and Sagittarius in our western sky after sunset, and by midnight, these constellations will begin to set. In the early evening, the Milky Way is running north to south, and by midnight, it will run along the western horizon. The period around New Moon on the 5th will give you the best chance to observe the zodiacal light after sunset in the west. Caused by sunlight reflecting off dust particles along the ecliptic, it will appear as a triangular cone of light. Saturn and Spica are low in the west and will soon be lost in our twilight sky. Venus is still high in our evening sky, and on the 8th, the crescent moon will sit nearby. On the 17th, Venus will be nearby to Antares and Scorpius. Both Neptune and Uranus are in our evening sky, but due to their faintness, they are challenging targets. The brightest true star in our evening sky is in the southeast. This is Canopus. During the night, it will climb higher in our southern sky. Whilst low down, this star will twinkle in a variety of colours, and this will decrease as it climbs higher. To Māori, Canopus is Atutahi, the high chief of the heavens. Canopus is only outshone by Sirius, the brightest star in our night sky. Sirius rises in the southeast after midnight. At this time, we have the three brightest stars, Sirius, Canopus, and Alpha Centauri, visible along the Milky Way. Alpha Centauri is the brighter of the two pointer stars that points towards Crux, the Southern Cross. When seen with the unaided eye, Alpha Centauri appears as a single yellow star with a yellowish hue. In a small telescope, however, this star can be split as two separate stars, one visibly brighter than the other. One is slightly brighter than our Sun, while the other is slightly fainter. Both orbit around each other in a period of about 80 years. Due to it being a binary, some list of bright stars do not have Alpha Centauri as the third brightest star, but to the unaided human eye, it outshines Arcturus, the next brightest star. The Southern Cross, Crux, can be found in the southwestern sky below Alpha Centauri after sunset. During the evening, it will get progressively lower and will be close to the horizon around midnight. From New Zealand, Crux will never set. Travelling along the Milky Way from the pointers and Crux, we come to a bright haze in the Milky Way galaxy. Called the Carina Nebula, it is a vast star-forming region about 8,000 light-years away. This cloud is brighter and covers four times the area in the night sky than the more famous Great Nebula in Orion, yet it is about six times further away. In binoculars and small telescopes, dark lanes and numerous star clusters are visible. Sitting in the Carina Nebula is a bright orange star called Eta Carina. Among the most massive stars in the galaxy, this star has been brightening over the last 20 years and is now visible to the unaided eye. The two metallic clouds are high in the south, sitting not far from the bright star Echina. These two dwarf irregular galaxies are nearby neighbours to our own galaxy, around 160 and 200,000 light-years away. Both will appear as hazy clouds slowly moving with the stars in our sky around the celestial pole. In 1987, a supernova was observed in the larger of the clouds. Although 200,000 light-years away, the supernova became bright enough to be seen with the unaided eye. Very low in the northern sky is the Andromeda Galaxy, easily seen in binoculars from a dark sky site. It is visible to the eye. It is similar in shape to our Milky Way Galaxy, but a little bit bigger and nearly 3 million light-years away. Jupiter will rise in the east around 3 a.m., and it will be low in the north by sunrise, hiding in the twilight sky as Mars, appearing as a red star. In 1989, the first potential extrasolar planet was discovered, and today the current total has risen to 974. Finally, comet Iceland is approaching our star, the Sun, and in early October it will pass by Mars and Regulus in Leo. The comet will be below and to the north of Mars for the rest of October. The comet should be visible in telescopes and in binoculars as the month goes by. The comet may become visible to the unaided eye by the end of October. We may still be in for an impressive display during November when the comet will be at its closest to the Sun. The size of this comet's nucleus has been estimated at being around 5 kilometres. We wish all our listeners clear skies from the team here at Carter Observatory.